Thank you for joining me on CMDA Matters today. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff Barrows, standing in for Dr. Chupp. I trust you had a restful 4th of July holiday. It is wonderful to celebrate the birth of our country and also have the opportunity to spend precious time with our families. But needless to say, we need to continue to pray for those impacted by the resurging COVID-19 pandemic. And speaking of COVID-19, recently Dr. Chupp and I had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Daniel Lewis. Dr. Lewis is a family physician here in Tennessee who also serves as the chief medical officer in one of the local healthcare systems. As healthcare professionals, we are used to treating patients, not being treated as a patient. But back in April, Dr. Lewis became the patient when he was diagnosed and eventually hospitalized with COVID-19. He opens up in this interview about his experience, how it impacted his wife and family, and why he thinks God allowed him to go through this trial. I invite you to hear what Dr. Lewis has to say about his experience with COVID-19 and how it deepened his walk with the Lord.
Well, it is indeed an exciting privilege for me today to welcome to CMDA Matters a doctor who has been prayed for by hundreds, maybe thousands of our members because of our Courage in the Crisis Facebook page. And that's Dr. Daniel, or Danny Lewis, from right here in the Tri-Cities, Tennessee area. Welcome to the program, Danny.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be here.
Well, I've asked to join me today our Senior Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows, and I thought that there's probably going to be a critical question that our listeners are going to want to ask that I don't ask, so Jeff is with us. Welcome also to the program, Jeff.
Well, it's good to be here, Mike, and thank you for inviting me. And Danny, I just wanted to tell you that I watched the video interview that you had with the American Academy of Family Physicians, and I was very impressed and appreciated the number of times that you referenced your faith in that interview as being so instrumental in getting you through the ordeal that you had.
Thanks, but again, it really was all truly in God's hands, and He was the one that was with me throughout the entire time, and I feel very confident, you know, His grace is the reason why I'm still here today, so it's hard to tell that story without including Him and including the faith, because it's all about Him anyway.
Well, let's back up just a little bit, Dr. Lewis, so that our listeners can hear the story from the horse's mouth, so to speak, from the patient and doctor's mouth. And just some background, you actually are a member of our Family Medicine Section Council, which we resurrected and rebooted last year. The chair there is Dr. Philip Dooley from Wichita, a friend of yours. And actually, Dr. Dooley is the one who wrote to us and said, hey, your local doc and our council member, Dr. Daniel Lewis, is in the hospital sick. Here's his Facebook post. And I read in that post, Danny, that you were, because of your familiarity with COVID-19, you were reaching day 10 and you were saying, wow, I'm on 6 liters of oxygen and I may need to get intubated. So take us back there. Actually, take us back to how in the world did you get COVID-19?
I actually serve a dual purpose in my facility here. I'm the chief medical officer as well. So I was part of a lot of the conversations about preparing our local facilities and our local system about preparations for COVID-19 and for the potential, you know, mass of patients we thought we could potentially have, which thankfully we have not had at this point. So my first 2 weeks in March, we really spent a lot in preparation for that with a lot of conference meetings. And it turns out another member of our administrative team had some travel the week prior over a weekend for a church conference in Washington, D.C., and came back. And on a day we were together with 3 or 4 system conference calls, began to exhibit a little bit of a cough. Later that night, developed a fever and spiked a fever and was tested for COVID the next day. He was sick for 2 or 3 days and overall had done fairly well. But on about day 9 after his test, he got the result back that he was COVID positive. Mm-hmm. And then I began to develop symptoms actually the next day after he got his test back. So my exposure came in my administrative role. And It lasted with fever and other symptoms until day 5 or so at the hospital, and day 10 when things began to deteriorate.
Talk to us a little bit about what was going on in your heart in the ICU, intubated, maybe on propofol, so maybe your level of consciousness didn't...
Right.
Tell us about that experience.
Certainly, it was the foremost part of the story. And with a such an organization such as the AAFP, I was trying to be careful not to be too foreknowing. But certainly, I think the morning of April 6th, when I, and really in consultation with my doctor and the critical care team, my oxygen, I advanced 6 liters. I was at 93% to 94%. Most of the evidence at that time seemed to point to the fact that if you were requiring 6 liters of oxygen or more than likely it was going to end the intubation. We actually made the kind of a mutual decision to go ahead and proceed with intubation in consultation with the critical care team because they felt the same. And I wanted to do that at that point so it wouldn't be an emergent situation. Obviously, in a COVID-dedicated unit, they were doing their best they could to limit exposure to anyone. So everything actually was done within the same room. They actually set up the ventilator and everything within the room I was in. I didn't leave that room for near 28 days.
Wow.
Other than go to radiology once or twice for a CT scan. But they did everything in that room. And I wanted it to be a controlled environment. I didn't want to be hypoxic or anoxic while they were trying to prepare the intubation. So we wanted to do it early. That morning started off pretty scary, but it quickly became, I would dare say, almost peaceful. God really gave me a great level of peace that I had to come from him because there's no other way I could have been as calm as I was. I remember texting my wife and saying, I'm getting ready to go on the ventilator. We need to do this to get me better. I think things will turn out fine. And I sent her a text and said, God's to be glorified no matter what out of this story because it's his story and it's his will for me, whatever that may be. I had several people ask me about, how scary that was. And honestly, that was one of the more peaceful times of the entire hospitalization. Knowing that we were moving forward, God was there holding my hand the entire time. I really, because of propofol, I don't remember much about it. I remember having conversations in the call. I can faintly remember respiratory placing the mask over my face to begin some kind of pre-oxygenation. But beyond that, I don't remember much until 2 or 3 days after the extubation, probably when the propofol began to decrease out of my system.
Well, God's purposes are so mysterious in our lives and why he allows, like a Kent Brantley in Africa to get Ebola and yet the incredible, powerful testimony impact on our nation. You were really a celebrity here in Eastern Tennessee. I saw you talked about on the news here. Because you're a leader, you're a chief medical officer in your hospital, and I found out from the YouTube video with the AFP that you've been on the board as a resident with AFP, and you're currently or upcoming Tennessee representative for the AAFP. You're a leader. So I don't know, I'm not saying God was picking on you, but it seems like he had prepared you to be someone that could have an impact in talking about how God sustained you.
Yeah, those questions did come up, and I tried hard not to be to ask the one, why me? But I feel strongly that there were two reasons why God chose me for this battle. One, I think you alluded to, perhaps, and I hope that perhaps my story was able to be a harbinger or a warning for those in this area that this indeed was quite real and that it did and had potential to be very deadly for lots of people. I had people allude to the fact, and I've just been so humbled by the support and the love and the prayers that, as you say, I've received from really all over the world. I had family medicine colleagues that I worked with in Pennsylvania, Alaska, Kansas, Wyoming, all reach out to me and tell me that, they were praying for me, also using my story as an example in their communities to say, it doesn't have to be an elderly individual with chronic diseases. It can be a young, otherwise young, fairly healthy individual that could be stricken, such as my friend in Tennessee. So I do think that that was part of the purpose. I think another part of the purpose was truly to slow me down and to recenter my focus on God. I mean, I've been a Christian. I was saved at age 14, been raised in the church and been even a leader there with Sunday school or even the music ministry at times in my smaller church. But, really had, I think, I've gotten out of balance between my faith, my family, and my work. With this line of work, obviously, it can be very domineering, can take a lot of time and a lot of effort. And with our role, my role in the hospital and the efforts we've made with consolidation in our community and things, I really felt like I'd gotten out of balance with my faith and with my family as well, you know, working more than I should and things. So I feel like, you know, certainly I hope that God can use my story. But the primary one that needed to be touched and slowed down probably was me. And, you know, this was by far the longest period of time I had been sessile and down, and I had a lot of time to think and reflect on that. And so, you know, I really hope as I go forward that God can use my story and use me for his glory, however that may be. But I certainly want that to be my focus.
Well, Danny, you know, and as I learned about your ordeal in the hospital and all of your complications and everything, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit in your answer, but I'm curious as to how this experience has changed your relationship with the Lord moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's made it, again, just even more of a priority for me. And, you know, I've always said that it's a priority, and that sometimes our words and our actions don't always meet and don't match. And so I think at times I was probably, you know, not dedicated the way that I should have been in my prayer life or my devotional life or studying life, you know, with children busy doing things that's, you know, church attendance and things, sometimes it takes a passenger seat or a back seat, even at times, even though you don't want to admit that, to the other things going on in life. And so, you know, it really did kind of help me. You know, I was kind of looking back and trying to figure out around the 20th or so of April was really a night where I was just struggling. I'd gotten over the ventilator, gotten over the delirium, and was progressing very well. And of course, in my time, he's wanting to move forward and wanting to move on to rehabilitation. And at that time, we were still having positive COVID testing. So the rehab facility that we had targeted wanted to have two consecutive negative COVID PCR tests done before I could be accepted there. And we now know that, you know, individuals with COVID could shed and have actually, the PCR test does not differentiate between infectious or non-infectious particles. And so I continued to shed particles. I had a pulmonary infarct in my lung, and I continued to shed particles for a week or so. So I was afebrile, doing well, wanting to move forward, and continued that positive test. So they're like, well, you can't go to rehab today. It'd be another 48 hours until we test, and another 48 hours until we test. And, you know, that was around April 20th or so. And really, I just one night was kind of struggling. And, you know, as I kind of alluded to, it got to a point where I said I had a talk with Jesus, but I put talk in quotation marks because it wasn't really a conversation. It was more of a, you know, just a complete, frank understanding of, you know, I had no power in this, but God had all the power I needed, and he needed me to relent and stop being stubborn and stop trying to make plans because it was his plan that he had, and he would be there waiting for me when I was ready to submit to his will, and that as he always is, and that he would be there. So really that night was the night I said, okay, God, you're in charge of this. You'll make this happen when you're ready to make it happen. You alluded to my wife. She absolutely was a rock star and, you know, very strong in her faith as well, but kept things together here at home and with the children and really kept the community up to date while I couldn't, and was just, you know, I can't say enough.
She was texting me on a regular basis, giving me updates, and then I was posting that on our Facebook Courage in the Crisis page, and then people were just praying, and people wanted, they would ask me, what's going on with Dr. Lewis? Let us know. She was quite the coordinator for you.
She was. I'm just beyond blessed. We'll celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary this year, and God completely knew what he was doing when he gave me her, and she was such a blessing to me and such a helpmate and such, and again, she was so wonderful during this time. So I knew that she had things under control here, and I just needed to sit back and just say to God, okay, God, whatever your plan is, whatever your will is. And it turned out his plan wasn't to go to the rehabilitation center that we had picked out for whatever reason he had, I went to another. And the influences that we had there perhaps were different than we would have had other places. So again, it just completely had to get to a point where I was broken in my own spirit to give it to God and say, okay, God, it's time for you to lead this and do with what you will. And he did. And, you know, after that developed some of the other complications, such as the pulmonary embolism of the SVT. And again, I don't think I would have been able to handle it without him being there with me.
Well, Danny, I'm curious, has your wife shared any lessons that the Lord taught her during your time in the hospital and her experience?
we've talked a little bit about that, and she shared some of those things. Again, I think probably she was as dedicated or more dedicated than I had been. So I think she had been in probably a better place with God for a while. She talked a little bit about how just he gave her some peace. And, you know, there was a story going around or a meme going around on Facebook talking about how, and I truly believe this too, is that, you know, in the Bible, men often are the one, Moses was called to the mountaintop, or others are called to places, locations. But God comes to women where they are because they're often doing the work of the family or whatever else that's required to keep things going. And, you know, God continued to be with her in that time. There was no, you know, express call out or anything, but he was just with her as she went through day to day and continued to be with her and gave her the faith. And, you know, she alluded some to how people had told her, you know, that she was so strong or things, that she just felt like she was doing what she needed to be doing and doing what God had her to do. And she certainly has a burden in the heart for the disadvantage. She continued to work with that while we were there. And God just sustained her and was just with her the entire time. Yeah. So I'm obviously very thankful for that.
Well, you've spent a lot of time, Danny, studying, even while a patient. I doubt while you were on the ventilator, but certainly before and after, studying and researching COVID-19 as a primary care physician and then a patient. In looking back, what are some facts about COVID-19 that you think caregivers who are listening right now really should be aware of, some things that have surprised you and that you've picked up along the way?
Well, I think predominantly one of the first things that really struck me was that I had the fever, certainly, but I didn't have the other classic symptoms initially of cough and shortness of breath until really late into my disease. Even when I went to the hospital on day 5 or day 6, I really wasn't short of breath. I had probably coughed at that point maybe 10 times total during my entire sickness. My symptoms are more gastrointestinal related, even kind of allergic type symptoms, but a lot of nasal congestion things which continued for quite a while. So first I would say that the symptoms don't have to be the classic cough and shortness of breath and things that you see. And thankfully, blessedly, it appears that there still are a large number of people, even up to 80% that get this, that either have asymptomatic courses or very mild courses. And we're grateful for that. You know, in some ways, I'd wish that mine would have been that way, but the story that God is weaving out of this tapestry is greater than anything else it would have been if it had been that way. So I begin to understand why it turned out the way that it did, and that's fine. And I hope he uses it for his glory. But for the majority of people, it can be a mild disease, but I still think it's very prevalent and it's still here. You know, as we begin the efforts to reopen the economy and those things, unfortunately, I see people not being very careful, crowds of people together. Or in my community, probably 30% of people are wearing masks when we're out and about, it seems. Most are following the social distancing guidelines, and that's a good thing, we think, because it certainly appears that the respiratory spread is the predominant spread. But there's more and more evidence suggesting it can be aerosolized as well and perhaps carried in that manner. And so I do worry that people are being a little bit too cavalier in their attempts to come out of quarantine or out of self-isolation. I understand the desire to want to do so, but I think we need to continue to be very careful in that, noting that the disease is still prevalent in the community. We have done some antibody testing in our hospital staff, just more or less for a prevalence check. And I heard last night that really only about 1% or less of our population has had antibodies. So it's not been widely exposed as many people may feel that it has been. And we're a long way from herd immunity. So I think this will continue to be present with us for a while. So I still would urge people to be as careful as you can be. And certainly I say monitor for the classic symptoms, but look for some of the other symptoms that aren't quite as prevalent as well. GI symptoms are much more prevalent than we initially thought. There can be other non-classical symptoms that can be present as well.
Well, what do you think about the infection prevention practices now? As you say, we're probably in this for a while. What I heard you sharing with the folks at AAFP on some opinions you have about PPP. Would you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, so certainly, and tell me more in the public eye, not for providers, correct?
Either one. Take your pick.
Well, I mean, I think for the public, certainly, I feel like, you know, mask wear is appropriate. I know that there's some angst and some concerns, and you can find opinions on both sides that say masks are harmful or beneficial. But in general, it seems as if masks are widely beneficial for the most part. I'd seen one study that suggested that if 80% of the population, so 4 out of 5 people, would wear a mask and maintain social distancing, that we could lower the infectivity rate of COVID to less than 1, which, of course, would then mean that every infected individual would spread it to 1 person or less. And in that regard, we really could get the handle and perhaps even extinguish the presence of the virus in communities. But I don't see 80% of people wearing that. I do see some individuals wearing gloves, which unless you're changing them with everything you touch, are probably not beneficial for the general public. For the medical professionals, I certainly do think that it's very appropriate to continue to wear masks in clinic. I continue to wear a mask with every patient, despite the fact that I have some antibodies, and I feel like I'm probably have some immunity to the virus, at least short term. But I think continuing to wear masks in clinics, all of our patients are masking as well. We are screening at the front for symptoms of COVID, and I'm trying to get people to remain in their cars if they have any of that and just live in their cars. But I do think providers, particularly following and seeing patients, particularly knowing asymptomatic patients can shed the disease, need to be very careful with masks and face shields if available, and certainly using gloves or gowns in situations where it would be warranted. I know some practices are starting to avail themselves of some of the telehealth options, and we are as well, and so some of our visits are telephone or televideo. I hope that continues to be a good option in our toolbox to utilize telehealth coverage and consultations for patients, because I think it will help us to lessen the burden of the disease and in clinics and offices and things. So I certainly would encourage mask wear and proper hand hygiene and following social distancing as much as possible.
Well, Danny, how is this, you know, your experience was not just as a patient, but as a very sick patient in the hospital for a long time. How has this changed your view of healthcare and the care of patients?
Well, it certainly was a side I had not, I had not availed myself of that other side of the bed to this point. I hadn't been in the hospital since I've been a child. And it was daunting for me. I mean, to go from being a fairly healthy gentleman in my mid-40s that was fairly robust, could do what I wanted to do, to relying on someone to get me out of bed or to assist me in my daily bathroom privileges or whatever that may be, was humbling and very daunting. I saw a lot of workers incredibly dedicated, willing to come in and, wearing their equipment, but yet doing what they needed to do and providing for me and my needs, despite the fact that I was exposing them to a potentially deadly virus every time they walked into the room. And, you could tell when individuals were afraid or when they were scared, perhaps, or trying to put things off. But I encountered very few of those individuals during the time I was in the hospital. Most everyone was just dedicated to their role. And as I said in the AAP interview, we attribute heroes to the wrong people in our society sometimes. We attribute to athletes and musicians. But truly, I had heroes taking care of me that were willing to sacrifice themselves and their well-being to take care of me. So it was very humbling in that regard.
Well, Dr. Lewis, our time is gone, and we are so grateful, Dr. Barrows and I, that you joined us today for CMDA Matters. Your testimony today reminds me of a psalm. David said in Psalm 66:5, "Come and see what our God has done, what awesome Amen. Miracles he performs for people." And that people today is Dr. Danny Lewis and your family. Yeah. So praise God. We'll pray that your testimony, ongoing interaction with patients, I guess I'm hearing you're back with in patient care, that God will bless you and take care of you and your family as you take care of others, possibly with COVID-19 down the road.
And thank you, Daniel, for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm very blessed. And yes, God did work a miracle in my life, and I'm very grateful to him for that. So thank you.
We're so thankful that Dr. Lewis chose to share his experience with us, and we're all grateful for his recovery. As you heard in his own words, "His grace is the reason I am still here today. God did work a miracle in my life. This infection slowed me down and recentered my focus on God with lots of downtime to reflect on faith. God can use my story and me for his glory." What a terrific response to what had to be a very trying episode in his life. That tells me that the Lord will continue to use Dr. Lewis's experience to strengthen his testimony as a physician who was touched by the ultimate healer. You should have received an email regarding the Indian reservations in the western part of the United States, which have been hit hardest with COVID-19, surpassing even New York State and New Jersey. The families tend to live in close quarters there, and many of them already suffer from underlying health conditions. That combination creates the perfect storm for the coronavirus to take a devastating toll. But the good news is the Lord has opened an amazing door for us to be able to serve the Navajo community in the midst of this pandemic through the Navajo area of Indian Health Services. With nearly 170,000 Navajos living there, and many of them without running water or electricity, they need our help now more than ever. GAHO veterans who want to help can apply through Service Reef to get the process started. Once your application is approved, we will forward your information to our local partner. More good news is that a local nonprofit has agreed to provide air travel, lodging, and the majority of transportation costs. PPE will be provided as well, but if you have supplies to share, they will be gladly received. If you failed to receive this email highlighting all of these details or would like more information about this opportunity, please visit cmda.org/global-health-outreach and click on the Trips drop-down menu. Because this CMDA Matters episode centered around health and recovery in Christ, there are a few resources I'd like to strongly suggest. The first is When Your Doctor Has Bad News by practicing oncologist Dr. Al Weir. What if, like in Dr. Lewis's case, the doctor himself receives bad news? Well, this book equips you to weather the storm you're facing with the hope of emerging whole again by the touch of the great physician. Another book I highly recommend was written by former CMDA CEO Dr. David Stevens, entitled Jesus MD, A Doctor Examines the Great Physician. This book invites you to partner with Jesus in his practice as Dr. Stevens shares the insights he has gained into the character, power, and purposes of the great physician and what it means for you to follow in his footsteps. Both of these resources are available online at cmda.org/store or call us toll-free at 888-230-2637. The Supreme Court has issued a ruling reinterpreting sex discrimination in employment to include discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. In his dissenting opinion on that ruling, Justice Samuel Alito noted, "Some employers and healthcare providers have strong religious objections to sex reassignment procedures, and therefore requiring them to pay for or to perform these procedures will have a severe impact on their ability to honor their deeply held religious beliefs." This ruling means that winning the religious freedom aspect of our transgender mandate lawsuit now takes on even greater importance. You can read more about that case at transgendermandate.org. Clearly, some of the foundations of our faith, medical science, and reality itself are under attack in the courts, our legislatures, and our culture. We know from Scripture that spiritual forces lie behind attacks on God's immutable truth and on the design of His creation. Ultimately, our enemy is not deceived legislators, activists, or judges, but the false ideas and spiritual forces of deception that have blinded eyes to the truth, truth that can set us free to live according to God's design. Pray for our country, our courts, our lawmakers, and CMDA, that we might all conform our lives to God's truth and follow His perfect path to human fulfillment and justice. Our scripture for today comes from Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 14. Heal me, O Lord, and I will be healed. Save me, and I will be saved, for you are my praise. So thank you again for joining us today. I'm Dr. Jeff Barrows, standing in for Dr. Mike Chupp. As always, what matters to you matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Have a blessed week.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.